Each and every decision you've made in your life has had an impact, shaped you into the person you are today. But what if I told you that there exists a universe for each of those choices, where things turned out differently? This may be a mere theory in our world, but within the realms of comic books, science fiction, or fantasy, it is a reality that holds infinite wonders and horrors. Either way, they make for some good storytelling. So come with us as we talk about the events occurring now and in the future. Let us discuss the state of the multiverse. Hello everybody and welcome back to State of the Multiverse. I am your host, Reese. I realize now that I probably should have been more clear with something I said the last time, even though I wasn't fully aware, so now I'd like to set the record straight. The incident of the assault on Superman in a book that I discussed the last time is not, in fact, in the current canon. This means it is not currently in the main universe of DC Comics. This took place in one of the issues of the book Superman Red and Blue, which is not canonical. This episode is going to be a review about the Guardians of the Galaxy game, but aside from the thing I just mentioned, I have one more DC-related topic to discuss, and then the rest of the episode should be devoted to the Guardians of the Galaxy review. This will not be a very long episode, at least compared to previous ones, but I will try and make it as enjoyable as possible. Let's get into it. So this first section before the review is just going to be a slight update surrounding potential upcoming things related to the DC film universe and rumors and things like that. Mainly, it's going to be about leaks that apparently have come out from the Flash movie, which basically means, according to them, they were initially released by Grace Randolph. If you don't know her, she's a social media personality that reviews movies and TV shows. But if you go to her Twitter, I believe, or pages like Heel vs. Babyface, Nerdrotic, etc., they will also relay similar information. But the rumors that have apparently been leaked is that not only will the Flash film act as a flashpoint moment inspired by the comics to reboot the DC films in a sense, it will seemingly out and out erase most of, if not all, of the Snyderverse materials. That means films like Man of Steel, Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice, Suicide Squad, and Zack Snyder's Justice League, which I just really should just start calling Justice League, but I don't want to be confused with the other one, will at the very least be altered, if not outright forgotten. Ben Affleck will be out as Batman once the film is over, as Batman will appear in the Flash film played by both Ben Affleck and Michael Keaton. Apparently Henry Cavill is out as well, and he will only appear in the Flash movie in stock footage, in a background of a certain scene apparently, not even getting the actor back to film anything new, which means that the Zack Snyder's Justice League will in fact be the last time we see him in a movie apparently. After the events of this film, Michael Keaton's Batman is set to be the Batman of the DCEU, at least for a short period, as the rest of the leaks seem to say that not only will the Batman and Superman be gone from the DCEU, they will be replaced in the DCEU. And you're probably wondering, well, you just said that Michael Keaton's going to be there. No, he's kind of an in-between stage from what these leaks say. The real focus is that the Batgirl project that is on the way is set to have Barbara Gordon replace Bruce Wayne in the DCEU. And unlike the Barbara Gordon in DC's Titans series, everything I've seen of this one, it does not impress me so far. They have revealed a suit image and it's frankly pretty bad. It's set to come out next year, I think. But the costume itself is just really bad. It looks roughly like a CW costume. Some set pictures have made it look slightly better, I'll give it that. And frankly, the only thing that I find interesting about this movie, which it's not even getting a theatrical release as far as we know, it's just going to be for HBO Max. The only thing I find interesting is Brendan Fraser, who we should all love, because he's just an all-around awesome guy, at least in my opinion, is playing Firefly, which is a very interesting casting choice. I saw some set footage of him walking out of a burning building, and it looks interesting enough. But the rest of it doesn't really inspire confidence. I mean, J.K. Simmons is coming back to play Commissioner Gordon, which, to me, easily the most visually accurate Gordon ever put to screen. But he was not utilized very well. Or enough, I should say. And for those of you who have listened to this show for a while, you know I don't really like race changes of characters, and the actress that will be playing Batgirl is not traditionally like the character. You know, she is an African American actress, as far as I know. Ultimately, it will come down to seeing her performance, obviously, but with the sentiment that the studio is giving, you know, having these characters replace Batman, and then I will get on to the Superman situation in a minute. I would love for Barbara Gordon to be done well in the DCEU. I would love for Nightwing, Red Hood, all the Bat family. I want all these characters to be done justice. If this Batgirl turns out to be good, great. I will be very happy with that. But it just depends on how that turns out. I just don't agree with her replacing Batman. In terms of Superman, he's going to be replaced with Sacha Calais' Supergirl, who is set to make her debut in the Flash movie as well. We have only seen set photos and a little bit in the trailer that we saw of this character. Frankly, I'm not very impressed. It seems to be inspired by Tom Taylor's Supergirl from the Injustice universe. It's Superman's daughter, but I have a feeling it's not going to be the same case. It's probably just more of a visual resemblance than anything else. But she is set to replace Superman in the DCEU. Frankly, same thing with Supergirl as with Batgirl. I'd love to see these characters put on screen in the right way. I would love to, you know, see the comic books that I read and enjoy and love translated as faithfully as possible. Obviously, things can't be brought exactly. But again, just having that replacement and disregarding of what came before, it seems very, very disingenuous, I suppose. I personally think that Ben Affleck's Batman is probably gonna serve a similar function as the Flashpoint Batman Thomas Wayne in the comics. He's probably gonna be portrayed in an aggressive, you know, less admirable light, which would completely go against his storyline from Batman v Superman through Justice League, which was about regaining humanity. But again, that's my own opinion of what I think will probably happen. I don't know. Nothing was said about that in this supposed leak. Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman is seemingly not going anywhere, so that would leave the Trinity of DC being all female. The film, set to come out next year, or no, this year actually, I correct myself, sorry, will supposedly form a new Justice League with Michael Keaton's Batman, Sacha Calais' Supergirl, Ezra Miller's Flash, and apparently Shazam, and probably, for all we know, Amber Heard as Mera. I, for one, do not like this idea, and I'm definitely not the only one, which I was very happy to see that people are speaking out against it. And just look at the fan support and eventual reception of Zack Snyder's Justice League. It might not be for everyone, and despite my love for the movie, I'll admit there's definitely issues with Snyder's, you know, version of the DC characters. But the film is a love letter to DC and its mythology. the League, the New Gods, Darkseid especially. It was paying the fans back. Like it was an event to pay the fans back for, for going along this ride with the story. And Warner Brothers seems to not want to repeat that if it kills them. And it probably will eventually. I'll leave that there, with one final like kind of sum up. Listen to the fans. They want to give you their money. And stop spitting in their face. Let's get to the Guardians of the Galaxy review. When I talk about the Guardians of the Galaxy game, it's not going to be a very in-depth review, much like, stuff you'll see on YouTube. It is just going to be my own opinions and feelings about the game. I will explain some mechanics of how the gameplay works, but overall, I won't be getting into the nitty-gritty of it, mainly just talking about interpretations of characters and who's in the game and certain things like that. The overall plot I will, mainly discuss in the spoiler section, but I won't be getting into near as much detail as, say, a YouTube review. This is just purely just to talk about the game and how fun it is. So, hope you enjoy. Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy. I was one of the many people who did not throw away my money on Square Enix's Avengers game. From everything I saw and the reviews that I watched, it was riddled with microtransactions and bugs and overall just bland gameplay environments and really wasn't what we wanted. Thankfully, this is not the case with their follow-up, Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy. I had looked into the game before getting it, and everything seemed to point to the opposite of what happened with the Avengers. It was the complete opposite. The game won awards but did not receive nearly as much promotion or attention as the Avengers. I'm going to be discussing spoilers later on. That will have a section devoted to it, and I will explicitly let you know when the spoilers are coming, so you can stop your listening there, or you can carry on playing if you do not mind that. I think this game is awesome, plain and simple. The idea of being part of the team, going from planet to planet and kicking ass all along the way is what I'm pretty sure anyone who enjoys the Guardians of the Galaxy wanted in a game. What I didn't realize would make the experience more interesting was actually limiting the player to only playing as Star-Lord. The function of this was not only to just introduce this new version of the Guardians, because we've never encountered them before, but to allow you to step up as Peter Quill to be the leader of the Guardians of the Galaxy. The best examples of this are in the combat and the Milano section slash cutscenes. Firstly, the combat. As Star-Lord, you can do things like fly for brief stints, make use of your element guns, which, unlike the MCU, they actually use different elements. But the true meat of the combat is the decision-making regarding how you use the team. Each character offers unique attack commands and individual mega attacks. These are not the exact names, I just call them that, like super moves, mega attacks, whatever. Gamora offers generally one or two big hit moves using her sword. Drax likes to hack and slash through enemies. You can use Groot to restrain or attack using branches and different things like that. And then there's Rocket. Rocket just blows shit up. Every team member's super move is actually unlocked for them when they complete their part or a part of their narrative character arc, which definitely adds to the weight of, the moment, like you earn this for each character. There is a mechanic within the game's combat that is particularly fun. It's called the Huddle. The game informs you when this is an option, but when it's triggered, it results in Star-Lord calling the team into a group huddle. The team will say how they feel about the current conflict in progress, be it good or bad. It is then that you are given two dialogue options. Both seem to give a bonus or a boost to Star-Lord, but if you choose the right one, not only will the whole team receive the same amount as Quill, but he will press his Walkman and music will play as you fight on in the battle. The music can range from music from the made-for-game band Star Lord, and their tracks, which, if you couldn't tell, that's where he gets the name from in this continuity, which makes a lot of sense. Or tracks that you may know a lot better, as in actual famous songs. One of my favorite moments involving the huddle mechanic was when I was in one of the final fights of the game, and the stakes were really high, the narrative has gotten to such a high point. I triggered the huddle, everything worked out, I picked the right options, and was met with, "Never gonna give you up." It made me laugh so hard that I immediately got killed. I didn't focus, so, because I was laughing too much. It took the tension out of the moment completely, and I ended up having to restart the fight, and I got a different song the next time the huddle. But it was just one of those laugh out loud moments for me. Yeah, so the game has plenty of action and plenty of laughs, if that wasn't clear. The jokes are pretty good throughout the game as well. The non-combat scenes are actually still really engaging. They are really the core of the experience of the game, at least in my opinion. As the leader of the ragtag bunch, you gotta take time to get to know your team and talk to them. And if the more you do that, you can actually take their views under consideration when you're making decisions, which definitely helps later on. The Milano sections are actually really good because you can unlock conversations with them depending on if you pick up certain items while out on missions. You collect them throughout different planets and stuff. Some of them give you the opportunity to learn things about, say, Gamora's betrayal of Thanos in this continuity, or Rocket's time as a living experiment. Even in the midst of missions, you have to make decisions on the conversations going on between the team members. You can say things that either help or hinder the morale of the team at certain times. And this really just gives an incentive to make sure that you're paying attention, even when the guns aren't blazing. In terms of negatives for the game, all I can really say is that the game is quite glitchy at times. Not to the point where it breaks the game at all, at least for me, but it seems like a lot of people who play this game have encountered different glitches. For me, it was mainly audio based. Meaning that either the voices didn't match up in cutscenes with the facial movements sometimes, or the icon of a character's communication coming in will appear in the corner, involving like Milano scenes, either we're on the ground and they're in the Milano or vice versa, but it doesn't play. So I'm hearing one side of a conversation and not hearing the other, so that was a little bit frustrating at times. But again, it for me, it did not break the game. Most of it still functioned very well. The references in the game were actually really fun. There's a lot of references to the wider Marvel Universe, from casual mentions of things like Asgard to characters appearing later on, either in vision-type moments or in person, or generally just characters being critical to the plot. The Nova Corps play a large role in the game, but notable hero Nova, aka Richard Rider, is only mentioned and never actually seen outside of one image or two. I'll get into more references and characters later on in the spoiler section. Now, before the spoiler section, I suppose for those of you that don't want to go that far, I will sum up very briefly my feelings on the game without getting into spoilers. I would say it's definitely a game you should get if you love the Guardians of the Galaxy IP. If you really enjoyed the movies, the game is a great mixture of the movies and the comics. Visually, it is very much the films, but a lot of it has been changed to suit the games. Or sorry, suit the comics. Like, for example, in this continuity, like the comic books, Ego the Living Planet is not Star-Lord's father. He is the son of the King of Spartax. Yeah, and if you also love loud action games and well-crafted character-based stories, this game is most likely one you will enjoy, bar the potential bugs. Again, for the glitches and stuff. From what I've seen, most people haven't gotten the same type of glitches, so it really just depends. I think that will about do it for the initial section. There's still a little bit more to discuss, but that will be spoilery. So if you want to not hear any spoilers, this is where you can step off. I hope you enjoyed this review. This is a very brief episode, but I just wanted to get this out purely mainly for talking about the Guardians of the Galaxy game. But if you don't mind hearing spoilers, we shall continue momentarily. So, the majority of the characters that are in this game I didn't talk about previously in the spoil, and now for the spoiler section I can kind of get into a bit more, just in case there's some things that people didn't want to know. I was aware of some things going into the game, but just, this is the spoiler section. So if you listen further than this and you didn't want to know anything, you can't say I didn't warn you. So this is the spoiler section. The right off the bat, characters that appeared in the game that never appeared in the MCU, for example, Drax's family. They appear in a section taking place within Drax's mind in a mindscape. Again, spoilers, this is during a portion of the game where the Universal Church of Truth has taken control of Drax. The team has to venture into his mind to try and get him out. But both Drax's wife and child appear in this section, and as far as I know, for those of us who haven't read the comics, this is the first time we've seen these characters. Gamora's sister Nebula is mentioned several times but never seen. She's revealed to be dead, at least according to Gamora. She describes Nebula as a very dark and violent individual, which may sound very similar to the MCU, but apparently Gamora herself killed Nebula. This is revealed towards the end of the game and is an incredibly difficult moment for Gamora, and it definitely serves as an opportunity for her new family to display the love and acceptance they have for everyone in power of it, which I thought was a very good moment, especially towards the end of the game. In the same Mindscape section that was previously mentioned, we see, at least in my opinion, a rather underwhelming depiction of Thanos. In this game, there's, like earlier on, there was a hint towards him where you hear him laugh in the same kind of scene. You hear a reference to Spider-Man and the Avengers and stuff. But in the continuity of this game, it is mentioned numerous times that Drax has killed the Mad Titan, even if Drax himself claims he still feels Thanos' presence within the universe. And I say underwhelming in terms of Thanos' design. Frankly, he looks like a custom character someone would make in a fighting game, like Soul Calibur or something, to recreate Thanos rather than be a finished design for the character. He was complete with a horned helmet and pointed shoulders, which it didn't really work for me. Maybe you'll like it, but for me it didn't. It just looks kind of cheap. The biggest cameo in terms of literal size of the character is that of Fin Fang Foom. Yes, the giant green space dragon of the Marvel Universe has a role within this game, and yes, you get to fight him. A character who I had never heard of before until this game is Lady Hellbender, and I am now a fan of hers. A big fan. That is all I will say on the matter. Mantis makes an appearance throughout the game, and unlike her MCU counterpart, she has greater power and a personality outside of just being dumb. Don't get me wrong, I like Pom Clementif as Mantis. She's very fun in the movies, but she doesn't really do much. In the game, she sounds like a mixture of Kat Dennings, aka Darcy from Thor, but she isn't as annoying. But she actually has weapons which are built into her suit that resemble a praying mantis's arms, which are pretty cool. Her powers are precognition and perception of potential timelines. Which leads to a lot of good jokes. And actually, well, some good jokes and a lot of cryptic dialogue. There's a whole portion of the game where Mantis is with the group and she keeps making references to things that she's seeing or sensing. And it's all just very cryptic or like makes people uncomfortable because they're like, what does she mean by that? But overall, I actually prefer this version of Mantis over the MCU. Which some people might disagree with, but to each their own. The other characters that show up, really, there's Cosmo the space dog, which was really cool to see, and he's even got some pups. He was good. He's in the game a couple of times. I'm trying to think, was there anybody else? In terms of actually showing up, you can visit Nowhere, which is the removed severed head of a celestial. And while you're there, obviously you meet Cosmo because he's the head of security there, but you can also go to the collector's emporium, which is basically, I guess, a very small version of the collector's collection. And there was some pretty cool items there. I went there on my second playthrough. And some of the things were okay. Like some of them I did not know what they were, but the ones that I did, I thought were really cool. And I'll list some of them for you here. First off, we have Richard Rider, aka Nova's helmet, the Ultimate Nullifier, which is a big throwback to early comics. It was on loan to the collector from Galactus. Cosmic glasses, which I believe were Stan Lee's. They look very reminiscent of what he wore. Cagliostro's book, which I believe is the book they reference being taken in Doctor Strange. Probably, I think it relates to time. Kang the Conqueror's time chair, which was pretty cool. The Cosmic Cube, which for those who only know the MCU, it does not contain an Infinity Stone. But it still can change reality. The Mandarin's rings, which was really cool to see. The Raptor amulet. I don't believe I know that one very well. Snowbird's tiara. I'm not very familiar with that either. Heimdall's sword was another one, which has the blood of Mangog on it. And s kept separately, Throg, the frog version of Thor, and his miniaturized hammer, which was really cool. And the Superhuman Registration Act, there's a copy of that there as well, which I almost forgot about. Also, a fun nod to the MCU, but apparently it has a relevance in the game, is the Yaka arrow, which is what Yondu uses. And they even make mention in the description that people who frequently have encountered beings like this now know to quote, aim for the mouth. And on the ominous side, we have a broken container in the collection, and it is labeled as Brood Queen. And for those of you who don't know, the Brood in Marvel are basically Marvel's answer to the Xenomorphs from Alien. They are bad news a lot of the time. There's been one or two, I think only one realistically, friendly members of the Brood. But yeah, so maybe that'll come up eventually. But bad news for anybody that comes across that. It's actually one of several references to the X-Men throughout this game as well. Amongst other items as well, already mentioned, is an eye from The Watcher. I would be curious to know how the collector got his hands on that. I feel like this next one is already a lawsuit in the making, but the Blade of Ikor, which belongs to a character named Angela, who is the lost daughter of Odin. And I have a vague knowledge of this character. Mainly, I know that she was originally in Image Comics and Spawn, but there was a big lawsuit, and somehow she ended up at Marvel, and now she is Thor's sister. But I wouldn't know very much about that character to have known instantly. So when I read the description on the item in the game, that's when I realized what it was. I wouldn't have known it straight away. It's a strange looking blade. It looks like a deformed axe almost. There is also a piece of Groot in the collection, and it's known as the Monster from Planet X. Also featured is the Cosmic Staff of Fire Lord, and Fire Lord is also a Herald of Galactus, similar to the Silver Surfer. Now, for the last two big characters I have to mention are the ones that are most critical to the overall narrative. That of Adam Warlock and his dark counterpoint, the Magus. For those who only follow the MCU, he is the being that is in the cocoon at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. He's heavily tied to Thanos and the Infinity Stones, and even higher beings such as the Living Tribunal. He was the one entrusted with the Gauntlet after the Infinity War event in the comics. Basically, he's a big deal. They even swapped him and Vision in the movies as to who has an Infinity Stone in their head, because Warlock traditionally possesses the Soul Stone in his forehead. The stone also appears very early in the game and is part of the central conflict later on. On the flip side of this, we have Magus. This is the dark half of Adam Warlock, an entity of dangerous levels of power and, frankly, an unfathomable ego. I'm less familiar with Magus. I know he showed up in the Infinity War story. I misspoke earlier on. I should have said the Infinity Gauntlet event. Yeah, so he shows up in Infinity War, and he's utilized well in the game. They both look the same, basically, except for some cosmetic differences, a slight difference in costume, but the same facial model and stuff like that. But the facial model actually, at least to me, has an uncanny resemblance to Henry Cavill. I couldn't unsee it once I came across Adam Warlock and then later Magus, but I showed it to some people that I know and they agree with me. It's very close to Henry Cavill. Either play the game for yourself or simply Google the character, like the version from this, if you don't care about spoilers or whatever. But you should see what you most people should be able to see it, I'd say. Where the game leaves off after you defeat the Universal Church of Truth, you are left with the original team members and now some new additions. Those being a space llama named Cammy, she's great, a chick who can see futures, a child with fiery hair who for some people actually theorize might possess the Phoenix Force, and an overly grammar-attentive golden demigod. Some people have wondered if this game could potentially lead to something of a Square Enix series with just different teams of heroes, possibly leading to the X-Men next, because there are several references hidden throughout the game. And if Cadet Nikki, in the end of the game, the reason she has fiery hair is that she now possesses the Phoenix Force, which that wasn't my interpretation when I first played it, but it definitely could be perceived as that. That could lead to a potential conflict or just lead to a game about the X-Men, for all I know. But the game leaves the viewer wanting more, I would say. If you were like me, that is. I can only imagine the adventures left to go on with this group of misfits, and I think the game is well worth the investment of time, for sure. Despite the few things I mentioned, the good definitely outweighs the bad. And it is most certainly a recommendation for me, if that wasn't clear already. I just hope it proves more successful as time goes on, and it's successful enough to gain a sequel. And I think that's going to just about do it for today, folks. I hope you enjoyed. I know this is a shorter episode compared to previous ones that I've brought out recently, but I just wanted to have a quick one about the game while I had a chance to talk about it. If you already have the game and you want to talk about it, why don't you send a message at State of the Multiverse on Instagram and we can talk about it. And if this review helped you in the decision to go get the game, please let me know, because that would be very fun to talk about. I hope it was informative and entertaining. Until next time, I've been your host, Reese, and you've been listening to the State of the Multiverse.